Answering your tough financial questions for the past 21 years, it's Hanson McLean's Money Matters with co-hosts Scott Hanson and Pat McLean.
Hi, this is Scott.
This is Pat.
In our program today, we're going to talk about an esoteric product that Wall Street created that in some people's portfolios, this thing fell 96%. You want to hear this story, you really do.
And we're also going to take your calls, especially one from a gentleman who has been diagnosed with Parkinson's and wants to figure out how that changes the way he manages his money for retirement.
Yeah, how do you plan for that, right? Short term, long term, we're going to hear from him. Stick around for Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Would you like an opinion on a financial matter you're dealing with? Whether it is about retirement, investments, taxes, or 401ks, Scott Hanson and Pat McLean would like to help you by answering your call. To join Hanson McLean's Money Matters, call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON.
Welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean.
Glad you are with us today as we talk about the world of finance, helping people make wise choices with their dollars and getting to a point in life where work is an option and not an obligation, helping people transition into retirement. And if you'd like to be part of our program, I'd love to hear from you, both myself and my co-host. We are both practicing financial advisors, certified financial planner, chartered financial consultant. We spend our weekdays with people like yourself and come here on the weekends to be your financial advisors on the air. And, of course, we love taking your calls and answering some things that are going on. And you'll also find sometimes we talk a little bit about our own lives and things that we've learned throughout time. And
well, I share a personal story. So last week we interviewed a estate planning attorney from Denver, Andrew Kroll. And it made me think, when was the last time I actually reviewed my own estate plan?
Now, this is interesting radio. So don't, if you just tuned in, don't go anywhere. Hey, I've got something interesting in my life.
I after listening to my own show or being on this own show, it actually prompted me to sit down with an attorney and review
my
estate.
And did you do that?
Yes. Actually, well, I haven't yet. I looked at the estate plan, did an asset chart, and I am meeting with the estate planning attorney this week.
So I recently updated mine. You know, I had trouble finding my trust.
What do you mean?
Just what I said.
Like it was buried in the house somewhere? Or?
It was buried in the backyard. I forgot where I buried it. What do you mean buried? No, it wasn't buried anywhere. I just could not, where did I place my trust? And then it got me thinking, well, what would my heirs do?
If they could they find it?
I only have like two main... I have four main drawers in my office where I keep important documents.
And you found them?
I did find them, but it took me a while. And for a few days, I thought I had lost my estate planning documents. And then I saw an article recently that said the high percentage of people that can't find their estate planning documents. And I thought, I'm a pretty organized guy.
Yeah.
And everything's got a place. I'm also one of those guys that my socks are laid out by color in their drawer.
Uh-huh.
And my shirt's all, you know... Workout shirts go here.
Doesn't everyone do that?
Here, and your work shirts go here, and your casual shirts go here.
Of course, everyone does that.
Light pants are hanging here, and your dark pants
are
hanging
here. We get the point. We get the point.
Suits are here. Yeah.
We get the point.
Okay. Your casual sneakers.
Enough. But the point being is, so if you haven't looked at your estate plan in a number of years, 4 or 5, or if there have been life changes, the big thing that prompted me to movement was when he said that when there have been life changes, and I realized I only have one child that's still a minor. And this trust had been written for when the kids were younger, much younger. And caused me to review it. So thank you Mr. Kroll.
Thank you for bringing that up. The start of our program, last week's show. That's always for good radio. That's why Pat and I have been doing this program for 23 years.
I was
years.
Just sharing. Just share.
We appreciate it. Thank you for sharing. So if you want to be part of our program, if you've got a question for us, you'd like to have us answer on the air, we'd love to take your call. By the way, if you one of those that say you just don't ever want to be on a radio program. We get that. You can send us a question. We have a blog that we answer questions each month on the blog. Questions@moneymatters.com. Questions@moneymatters.com. You can send us your question, and we'll answer one a month on that. But if you've got a question you'd like us to address here on the air, we'd love to take your call. And a matter of fact, if this is not a convenient time, there are times we're in the studio that we can schedule a different time during the week also to take a call. 1-888-2-HANSON is the number to be part of the program. 1-888-2-HANSON. Numerically, it's 888-242-6766. And love to take your call. Why don't we start out in Colorado and talk with Abe. Abe, you're with Hanson McLean.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you, Abe.
What can we do for you?
Yeah, so I'm in a situation where I think I'm pretty well set up for retirement under normal circumstances. However, I was recently diagnosed with Parkinson's disease, and that is a little uncertain of what my future will lie, lies ahead of me. So I guess my general question is recommendation on how to manage my portfolio or my investments in general, knowing that the length of time I can work is a little uncertain, and then obviously there'll be some increased medical expenses post.
How old are you, Abe?
48.
And tell us about your life a little bit. Are you married with children?
No, I'm single, no kids.
Okay. And what do you owe on your home?
Well, I actually have an extensive real estate portfolio. I own three duplexes, all of which have a mortgage tied to them. But I estimate I have about $800,000 in equity.
And what's the overall value? What do you have in loans, and what's the overall market value of these duplexes?
Good question. I have that right here for you. I estimate the market value to be somewhere in the neighborhood of $1.8 million. And I owe about
a million.
Let's see. Yep, about a million.
And these are outside of your primary residence.
Well, I live in one side.
Got it.
And I.
And do you have any plan to get these paid off?
Well, I was thinking about recasting one that has the lowest balance and paying that off, and then leveraging that cash flow out of that unit to try to pay off the other units as more quickly than I would normally.
And are the interest rates all fairly similar?
Yes.
Okay. And what is the interest rate?
Right around just under 4%.
And how much do you earn at your job?
About 150.
And what do you have in your 401k? What do you have in your 401k?
I have $500,000.
Yeah, well, you've done well getting some money saved up.
And do you have a living trust in place?
I do not.
Okay.
I would, so if I were in your situation, I would focus on getting these duplex. I mean, you don't know what your future's like, right?
Yeah, and right.
You might be able to, work 25 more years, and maybe, right? Who knows?
Everyone's journey in Parkinson's is different. The diagnosis and the onset comes in every form possible. I'm not telling you anything you don't know.
We don't know really how many more years you've got to work, right?
Correct. That's the unknown factor.
Yes.
Based on your discussions with your doctors, what is kind of a worst case scenario as far as number of years working?
Well, worst case scenario is I'm not working anymore. I was diagnosed 5 years ago. Yeah. So they say originally 5 to 10 years you can maintain a job. I'm still working at a high level of productivity now. So I've got at least another 5 more years in me, if not longer.
So I would work on getting the loan balances on these duplexes as low as possible.
Yeah. Yep.
And if you hit the point where suddenly you can no longer work, then you want to recast those whatever debt's still on there as long as possible. Because at that point, you can care less getting it paid off. You want cash flow.
Right, right.
Right now, you want to get those things paid off so you've got the most amount of equity, which generates the most amount of cash.
I agree with that. And I put a living trust in place. And now where they have the electronic stimulus surgery, right, the longer you wait, the better that stuff becomes.
Right, but that's 150K right there.
Yeah, yeah, but so, it's absolutely can be absolutely life changing. So you know, so I actually, my wife and I support the Lou Ruvo Brain Institute in Las Vegas, Nevada. Who do they do great, great work with the Cleveland Clinic about Parkinson's and Alzheimer's. So if you've ever get a chance to do some research or visit their website. It's the Lou Ruvo, R-U-V-O, Brain Institute in Las Vegas, Nevada.
Thank you. I'll take note of that.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I like the concept of just, let's just focus on getting this thing
clear. I like it as
well. Don't live like a pauper now.
That's what the hard part is, right?
Live life at the same time.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I can do while I can.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the, yeah, you got to strike that balance.
So. What about cashing out of the market? Like, the market's been going crazy for a few years. And
what
more
percent?
Recently,
what
more
percentage
so.
Do you? What percentage do you have in stocks?
It's mostly stocks.
And you know, most 48-year-olds that say perfect, keep it on stocks. We don't care what the value
yeah,
is.
Yeah, but I would probably have my portfolio probably 60% equities and 40%.
Yeah, I would probably have to scale it back a bit just in case. Let's say 5 years from now you can't work and you need to start taking some income from that.
Right.
Yeah.
We don't know if we have 5 more years of work or if you have 15 more years of work.
And that's a challenge.
Yeah. Yeah.
Both the emotional.
Yeah. Yeah.
All the whole bit. Like,
part of the disease and also the from a financial planning.
Yeah. And with some days you probably say, well, why am I saving any money at all? Right.
Yeah. I question why I'm going into the office. You know?
Yeah. Some days
I should be traveling the world.
Right. I mean, that's, you know, not knowing the future is actually, probably sometimes better than knowing the future. So that's a balance you need to strike. So I would probably reallocate the 401k 60-40. I don't think I'd go much more than 70-30.
Yeah, I would agree with Pat.
My heart goes out for you because you're a young man. You're 48 years of age, and so it's hard to strike that balance. What am I saving for? What's the point? Well, maybe it'll be super, super important that you have that money in 20 years, or maybe it won't. It's that's you know.
Yeah.
But what they do know is with Parkinson's, are you a bicyclist? Are you a cyclist?
I am actually.
All right. And you've read the research on cycling and how it delays the progression of the Parkinson's disease. You've probably done some.
Yeah, I actually teach a spin class for fellow Parkinson's.
It's amazing that twitch muscle actually on the brain development and is keeping it healthy it's an amazing concept. So.
Yeah, but boxing as well.
Yeah, actually, I have a client that has Parkinson's that boxes,
really?
And she's in her 70s. She's in her 70s. She boxes a couple times a week.
Yeah, it's any high intensity exercise if your callers are care or you care. It's any high intensity exercise really helps out. Helps with the conditions.
My understanding though is it has to be an exercise that actually is fairly when you say high intensity. It also has to draw the hand and the muscle coordination to the brain. Correct.
Oh, that's part of it, yes. And also, actually, if you do math problems while you're exercising, it's even better for you.
And those are hard.
Isn't that funny? You know what? You know what's funny, Abe? You know what's funny, Abe? Is I actually I cycle and I like to ride long distances and relatively slow. But I took all the measuring things off my bike, the ones that would tell you miles per hour and how far you've ridden, because when I would ride, I would do math problems in my head the whole time by looking at the meters. And I thought it ruined my bike rides for me because the whole time I'd be doing math, and my job requires math. So.
Right.
All right, Abe. Good luck
appreciate
to you
the call.
On this. And,
appreciate the call.
Yeah, appreciate the call. Hope this helps.
Thanks for help.
All right. You know what's interesting, Pat, is in many aspects, we're all in Abe's position. We don't know.
Yes.
Right? And we've certainly seen enough people at Hanson McLean over the years that have had a job where they're like, I've got 7 more years. And it's like doing time. They hate it.
I ran into a guy from high school recently, and I said, how you doing? He said, I get to retire in 7 years, 4 months, and 3 days. And I thought to myself, oh, how miserable.
And we've worked with lots of people looking at their financial planning of trying to get that balance between today and the future. Yes, we need money when we're 85. If we
and probably need money when we're 85.
Probably. But if you're not digging your, if your job is miserable today, maybe you look at doing something different, even at a lower pay, and push out that retirement instead of 7 years. Maybe it's 12 years.
It's only, you only have one life. And
we don't know. Yeah.
We only have one life. And while money is important to that life, it's the way you store your labor. It isn't the only thing.
And let's continue with calls. Again, if you want to be part of Hanson McLean's Money Matters, love to hear from you. 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON. Numerically, it's 888-242-6766. And let's go to Hawaii. Actually, that's not really. I would like to go to Hawaii, but let's take a call in Hawaii with Dan. Dan, you're with Hanson McLean.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah, glad you're calling. Thanks.
And my question is, are there different means for an individual to take the annual RMD, the required minimum distribution withdrawal from IRA retirement accounts? And once the annual RMD dollar amount is calculated, can that amount be withdrawn in dollars or ETFs or mutual funds or stocks?
So it can be withdrawn whether it's cash or asset as long as the market value is there. If you have several IRAs, you can take the withdrawal just from one. But if you have other employer-sponsored plans, 403Bs, 401Ks, et cetera, it needs to come directly from those particular plans.
My particular case, I'm self-employed, so they're my IRAs.
Got it. How many IRAs do you have?
I've got three.
And why?
I have a regular IRA. I have a regular IRA that I just put into a bank so that I wouldn't have the fees. And then I have a SEP IRA. And it's just okay. over the many years.
Are you still working?
I am.
Oh, got it. How old are you?
Going to turn 66 next month,
and I've
applied for Social Security to take my at 66.
And are you putting the maximum into the SEP IRA?
I have in past years, but I've really have done nothing over the last 5-6 years with it.
Okay,
so. What is your concern? Something caused you to call us today because there's some concern about what is that concern? What is
about required minimum, or is it just curiosity about the required minimum distribution?
Yeah, just the curiosity of that.
Got it.
I didn't know how that's done. I know the IRS gives a figure to say this is the first year that the percentage that you have to take. And I didn't know how that has to be distributed.
Got it.
So here's
the mechanics.
Yeah. Because we've got thousands of clients and many with required minimum distributions. Some people, they're retired and they say, well, I need some income anyway. So if my required minimum distribution is $10,000 a year, send me $1,000 a month out of my IRA. I'm going to use that to help my spending. I've satisfied my required minimum distributions. Or maybe more. There are some people that say, you know what? I don't need these dollars at all. I would rather not have to take the distributions. Then you could set it up so automatically each fall before December 31st, whatever that required minimum distribution is, gets distributed from your IRA and gets just set up into maybe a trust account or a personal account that you have set up. Taxes are paid, but the asset's still there. It doesn't have to come into Dan's checkbook and spent. It can still be saved. So, and then there's a number of different ways you can structure it.
You can do it all from one IRA and not the other two, but it kind of creates a hassle because the IRA custodian is required to.
Oftentimes you just want one at that.
Yeah.
At that
oftentimes you just want
and
one
it
start, IRA.
It starts at about 3.5% at age 7.5, and as time goes on, it slowly gets a little higher than that. So appreciate the call, Dan.
He's got 4 years to worry about it, though. There's a good chance the rules may be different in 4 years.
Yeah.
That I know. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, it might not be. It hasn't changed much over the last 25 years.
But appreciate the call.
Rather than taking calls, I want to chat a bit about some of these esoteric products that Wall Street creates. And we say Wall Street, I guess we just mean the financial services industry as a whole.
Yes.
Because a lot of firms aren't
Wall Street anymore.
Aren't on Wall Street. The big banks aren't even on Wall Street anymore.
No.
So these products that get created, financial products, where it can provide some upside.
Well, sometimes they're used, some of these esoteric products, sometimes people, they're designed to use as hedges against certain position or market volatility, and people use them outside of that realm.
Yeah, and some of these products, I mean, a lot of these are derivatives. We heard this term years ago. I remember that.
What's it derived from what?
It's an investment product derived from an underlying product, and it really started back in the days of farming. And we hear about things like pork bellies or corn
soy
futures.
Or...
Right? So a farmer would, let's talk about soybeans. This soybean farmer would plant his crop.
He didn't know whether it was going to be worth anything. He didn't know what the price was of soybean was going to be.
Because it's all based on supply demand. Everyone has a bumper crop. Price goes down. Too much.
Yeah. It's something completely out of the control. Weather. Right? There's no livestock to feed it to. It's completely out of the control. So what these derivatives came about, which is you could actually, for a premium, sell that price risk to someone else. You could guarantee.
For a future date.
You could guarantee a price at some future date, and someone else would take your money and say, I'll take that risk.
Yeah, someone else would say, I'll take that risk. Sometimes people are saying, I'm going to take that risk just because I've got a hunch.
Or sometimes.
Sometimes they have their own
risk.
Financial reasons.
Sometimes they have their own risk, and they're trying to diversify their risk.
So anything that you can possibly think of, that's a very simple product, but no matter what it is, Wall Street can create a tool for you to bet for or against that thing. And some of these products get designed for the average investor and packaged in the form of a mutual fund or an exchange-traded note. An exchange-traded note work very similar to an exchange-traded fund, an ETF, but they're slightly different, and they tend to deal more with sometimes these financial products that there's no real equities underneath them or anything.
Yeah, they're derivatives.
Yeah.
They're derived from something that's real, but they're synthetic in nature.
And going into this this market hiccup we had that began a couple weeks ago, there were these exchange traded notes that allowed people to bet that volatility would remain extremely low.
As it has been.
Or had been. Last 2017, extremely low volatility. And people can use these products, and as long as volatility stayed low, they could generate a return.
And all that means is they're betting that the price of the S&P 500 doesn't go up or down too much. They're not betting on whether it goes up or down, just not up or down too much, that the price swings are not that great.
And these products were created, over $3.4 billion were invested in roughly a dozen of these inverse VIX. VIX is a measurement of volatility. Exchange traded products were $3.4 billion is what investors had put into these, according to the Wall Street Journal. And when volatility spiked back up, some of these declined dramatically.
I see one declined over 80%.
Numeris Securities, based out of Japan, had their note, Numeris Next Notes S&P 500 VIX Inverse ETN, dropped more than 80%.
Man.
On that Monday. And here's the statement they put out to their holders of these notes. We apologize from the bottom of our hearts for causing great inconvenience for the holders.
I don't think it was. I think it was more than an inconvenience.
Investors in the product were told they would receive just 4% of its market value a day earlier.
Which means that for every $100.
On the dollar.
for every $100 that you put in, they were going to get four
now,
back.
Now, why are we talking about this? Odds are no one listening to this program owned any of these inverse VIX exchange traded notes.
I hope.
But you might have something similar in your portfolio. There might be some other things in there that you think, ah, this is a great way. Maybe you've had some covered calls on some stock. You think, oh, these will never be called because the volatility remains short.
Maybe you just own stuff that you don't understand and your advisor has not been able to explain it to you. That's enough.
Owning something like this, this isn't investing. This is speculating.
This is gambling.
Gambling. That's why some people ended up with 4 cents on the dollar. So as an investor, if you're sitting there, you've talked about your retirement dollars, make sure you understand what you own.
And if you have questions, ask your advisor.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we will continue with calls 1-888-2-HANSEN. This has been Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Stick around for our second half.
Wondering if you're on track with your financial matters? Call now at 1-888-2-HANSEN. That's 1-888-2-HANSON.
Want more of Hanson McLean's Money Matters? Visit HansonMcLean.com/radio to get the Money Matters podcast.
Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean.
If you want to be part of our program, we'll take your call. 1-888-2-HANSEN is the number. 1-888-2-HANSON. And I would love to take your call about something going on. Why don't we just start right with the calls? And let's go to Northern California in San Jose. We're going to talk with Rosie. Rosie, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm trying to figure out, you know, I have several million dollars to invest all at once. And because I hadn't been investing it, it's kind of a long story, but wondering how fast to invest it.
What was the source of the dollars?
Work.
They were from you working?
Yes.
And are they in a company 401k?
No. I've been self-employed, but I've been not really investing it, and I just CDs and stuff. And now I want to get a better return, but I'm afraid to put everything in the market.
And do you have any debt?
No.
And so these monies were never put in. Are you, when you're self-employed, do you have any employees?
I did.
Okay. Oh, did you just sell? Do you have a transaction in your business?
Pardon?
Did you have some transaction with your business?
Did you sell your business or a portion of your business, or is this money saved slowly over time?
Yeah, I've saved.
And you've never, have you ever invested before, like mutual funds?
I had some investments at mutual funds that I started many, many years ago. Then I went to Merrill Lynch, and then I was so busy, I worked more than 80 hours a week. And so they convinced me to sell them because I bought long-term bonds when Meredith Whitney said to get rid of them. And so then I had all those losses. So then they encouraged me to sell all my gains. And then I didn't buy them again because it's like, well, I've already sold them. Why would I go back and buy the same thing?
And how long ago was that?
Like, wasn't that 10 years ago? Okay. 8 years
You know, ago? So Rosie, you're not alone. So a lot of people who accumulate some assets, it's through their hard work, right? You worked hard over your career. These dollars did not just drop in your lap. You've worked hard. You've got these assets. They sound substantial. But it doesn't mean you have the knowledge you had in your own profession. You don't have that same knowledge when it comes to the financial markets, right? And now you've got, you're sitting there trying to, what's the best decision to make here?
Yeah, no, it's just how fast to invest the money.
There's no rush.
I don't know if you should invest them at all. Quite frankly, I don't know. You haven't invested. How old are you, Rosie?
55.
And you've invested a little bit over time. You've got several million dollars. There's been a reason that you haven't been, well, you say it's because of time, the 80 hours a week that you work, which is quite frankly, I can believe that. I don't know.
You just haven't made it a priority.
Correct. I don't know whether you should invest 10% or 20% or 50%.
I would not take
your entire portfolio and throw it in the financial markets overnight.
I certainly would not do that. I would recommend that you actually sit down with a fee-based fiduciary advisor.
Not someone who works for a firm that gets paid on commission or has another agenda, meaning they have their own financial products.
I had bonds, municipal bonds, lots and lots of them. But for many years, I was paying 1.5, 1.75 even. I don't know what Merrill. And some years, they didn't even buy anything for me.
Well, that
I had like three. I mean, that was just now when I think about it, it seems like I should be criminal. It's just unbelievable.
I agree. I mean, I absolutely agree. What happened is you had a bad experience with a good broker, right? That's what it sounds like. So the answer to the question is you probably should invest some of it. But I don't know how much of this several million dollars.
And here's what I would strongly encourage you to avoid: investments that are illiquid, things that you can't turn to cash tomorrow. Because what ends up happening, Rosie, when you start having more assets, other brokers and financial types, they look at you and say, why don't we recommend this private equity fund to you, this hedge fund to you, these other types of partnerships to you to get you some alternative investments. The challenge is you're oftentimes locked up in these partnerships for 8 years, 10 years, 12 years. Sometimes they never, ever fully unwind. And you've got all these K-1s coming from all these sources and you can't keep track of them. And it doesn't necessarily make your life any better.
And
all you care about is making your life better, not worse.
Rosie, anytime you move away from bank CDs or money markets, anytime, it adds risk. And the question is, do you need that, take that risk? Are you going to achieve your objective without taking that risk? We all want to be good stewards with our money, which is we want them to grow as much as we possibly can. But that growth oftentimes can come with risk. And the question is, first of all, do you need to take the risk? And the second of all is, Eve, do you want to? And what's it going to do to make your life better? We have
people with multiple millions on both ends of the risk spectrum, Rosie. We have people with multiple millions that say, look, why do I need to take any risk at all? Are you kidding me? I've got plenty of cash. Let's be super conservative. I don't need to have stocks. Why do I need to worry about that? I'm not even spending the income that's generated now. I'm taking it really. And then we have people on the other side saying, I got tons of money. Why am I worried? I'm going to go ahead and take the risk. I can afford to have some ups and downs in the portfolio. It's not going to bother me. And so it comes down to personal decisions. So our recommendation, Rosie, is interview a couple certified financial planners, fee-based financial plan. I really think that having the right relationship with the right advisor at this stage with what you've got would be the prudent thing to do. It would be the wise thing to do. So our recommendation is you interview two or three certified financial planners, talk about your situation, and then kind of see what makes sense to you. What do you like?
Rosie, do you actually have, you're still employed?
Yes.
And do you have any employees?
I did and I don't know.
Okay.
I did.
So here's what you can do. I mean, this goes beyond that.
I have a part-timer okay. Probably.
So what you can do is you can actually set up a what's called a Unique or self-employed 401k, a solo K.
Put in $55,000 or whatever.
$55,000 or if you wanted to put even more money into it, you could actually set up a defined benefit pension plan and put
age weighted.
Yeah.
Not a traditional pension, but it kind of acts like it. You can funnel money in.
And those are questions. So you're asking about the investments. It goes beyond the investments. It's what tax strategies can we use to improve your situation? And you not taking advantage of the fact that you're self-employed is a mistake.
Yeah. So anyway, talk to a few financial advisors, I think, and get the right philosophy. And you don't, just because you have a lot of money, you don't need to make it complicated. You do not need to make it complicated. You can keep life relatively simple still. And by working with someone who's independent, you're talking about municipal bonds, that might make the most sense, but you work with a big firm that does the quote-unquote underwriting. They're the ones that help these municipalities raise the capital. They'll sell you the bond, say, oh, there's no commission. There's no commission on it. That's because they're getting paid to create these things in the first place. You don't need that conflict.
And let's go to Christy, 1-888-2-HANSEN, to join the program. Christy's calling us from Garden Valley. Christy, welcome to Hanson McLean.
Well, hi.
Hi, Christy.
I've been listening to your show for years, and I've enjoyed it so much.
Oh, great. Thanks.
My question is, I've watched over the years people do very well in real estate, but I don't want to be a landlord, and I was wondering what you thought of investing in REITs as an alternative.
Where did you learn about REITs?
Well, you know.
Okay.
I know a few things.
Okay. Let's kind of step back.
Let's talk about REITs.
So what a real estate investment trust, a REIT, is, it's a special type of corporation that avoids a double taxation, provided that, I believe it's 90% of its operations are in real estate. And they distribute, I think it's 95% of the income to its shareholders. So it's a special structure of a corporation that is called a REIT that can distribute the income and avoid the double taxation. There are two broad categories of REITs, of structures. One is what's called a publicly traded REIT,
which trades very similar to a stock.
Just like other kind of companies.
Or a bond.
They're companies that own real estate, apartment buildings, commercial properties.
And
whatever.
Sometimes they specialize in certain sectors. Some might only own retail. Some might only own apartments.
Shopping malls.
Some might only own golf courses.
Then there are what are called private placement real estate investment trusts.
Or non-traded real estate investment trusts.
And these are ones that are
sold to you by high commissioned brokers.
Yes. So when you first brought up this REITs, I think publicly traded REITs can be great in a portfolio.
I think a mutual fund of publicly traded REITs can be,
or an ETF,
a great addition to your portfolio.
What we don't care about are these non-traded REITs that are sold through brokers.
Gotcha.
So if someone comes to your house or to your place of business,
or you visit with them,
or you go to them, and they recommend a non-traded REIT, also, and they'll disguise it as 1,000 different things, uncommon investment, or is someone, know, not it, correlated to the market.
Has someone recommended these to you?
Oh, that your comment sounds so familiar. But no, I know about these because I've studied them a little bit. And I was in fact speaking about traded REITs and mutual fund.
Perfect.
Of REITs, but my concern lately has been retail's kind of under pressure.
But there's more than retail REITs.
Yeah.
Right? There's all kinds of different REITs, right? There's mini storage REITs. There are.
In my hometown, which is a college town, there are college apartment REITs.
That's correct.
Who own half the town. Yes, I understand.
That is correct. So, as a portion of your portfolio, they make a lot of sense. Don't go hog wild on them. Remember, real estate is just another asset class. There's nothing special about it or not special about it. It hasn't historically, over long periods of time, either underperformed an asset, other asset classes.
No.
So don't, you know, people will ask all the time, is real estate good? Can be. Are stocks good? Can be. Bonds good? Can be.
Well, and it's just it all depends on what the real estate is, where it,
when you buy
location,
it, when
what
you
kind
sell
of debt
it,
structures on it, what's the management of it.
Yeah. So, if you were to put, I don't know, 10-15% of your portfolio in REITs,
yeah,
I wouldn't overdo it, but I don't think
no
you'd hurt yourself
that,
at all.
Huh?
Nope.
All right.
All right, Christy, thanks for the call.
Thanks.
Well, let's move to the time in our program where we talk real advice. During this segment, we have one of our financial advisors at Hanson McLean come on and share with us something that...
a story about their interaction with a client. And
what happened with them. And, I mean, frankly, let's put it frank. It's designed to really showcase some of the examples of some of the things that come through the door,
Yeah, a real-life situation that you might be able to relate to.
Yeah, some
to show
aspect
how
of
the financial advice works in practice.
That's right.
And Steve, not just theoretical.
Steve Burnett is joining us today, and Steve's been with Hanson McLean for over 20 years.
Scott, so we have to give a disclaimer, though. Your experience with a financial advisor at Hanson McLean may or may not be positive.
That's right. Let's see, if we're that clear on the disclaimer, then I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because we're not supposed to give endorsements. This isn't intended to be any sort of endorsement of Hanson
Just
McLean.
Showing you what we do.
So Steve Burnett is joining us, and Steve is a financial advisor, certified financial planner here at Hanson McLean, is also the president of the organization, been with Hanson McLean for over 20 years, but still has clients that he works with, as all of our advisors do. And Steve, thanks for taking some time to be on Hanson McLean's Money Matters today.
Absolutely, gentlemen. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so tell us the skinny here. What happened?
Well, this is a very interesting story. A gentleman and his wife have been clients of the firm for about a decade before he actually was contemplating retiring. She quit a previous job, transferred her 401k to our company to manage, and then she actually went to work for the same utility firm that he works. And he's now been there over 40 years, so we've worked over that entire 10-year period to get ready for an eventual retirement date, even though he couldn't actually point his finger as a date that he wanted to go out. He really wanted to go out based upon achieving what he thought were his financial goals. And we did that up to late last year. He hit all of his goals and had a solid pension program in place, his Social Security estimates, plenty of money and then some to achieve their financial goals, but was really still struggling with, can I retire? What things other than just the money should I be looking at? And let's face it, he'd been doing what he'd been doing for over 40 years. The fear of leaving the workforce was really, really bothering him.
And at the same company for 40 years?
He'd been there for 40 years.
Yeah, wow.
That
is really rare anymore that someone's at the same employer for 40 years.
Steve, in the field, in an office, you mentioned utility company. You've got both sides of it there.
Right. He started in the field and for about the last 15, 20 years had been in the office as a manager.
So he could possibly do this until his
Why do they call it the life. Field?
Because you're out in the, well, I guess. It's,
so my mom and stepdad both retired from the Edison company. And when they my parents had split when I was a little kid. And my mom married this man who worked for the Edison company. And sometimes I'd call, and he's out in the field. And as a kid, I thought,
like
there must be
picking?
Like a field next to the office, and he's out in the field.
Wait, playing kickball? Or
I just, as a kid, he's out in the field, and I had this vision in my mind what the field must look like. The field.
Okay, well, Steve, on with your story.
Okay. So
sorry.
Our meetings really changed. One of the things we talk to clients about is about getting to the point where work is an option and not an obligation. And we had by and far achieved all of those goals and the concerns about where he was financially. So the last couple years of meetings really changed. We got to an agreement that, you know, he spent 38, 40 years where he was at to get to this point, and we really hadn't spent much time on what's his retirement going to look like. What are the things that really he enjoyed at work, and how is he going to replace those things if he were to leave the workforce? And honestly, up until the point where he finally said he had enough and he's sick of it, and he said, I'm retiring, I just can't take it anymore. So he retired because he kept asking me, can I retire? And I said, we've said you can. For the last couple of years, it's your choice when you want to go. So he finally left, and then we handled his transition. We walked him through the paperwork. We rolled over his retirement accounts. And then the guy disappeared for 6-7 months. This is a guy that historically
came in. When you said you disappeared, he had no contact with the firm, our firm, for 6 or 7 months?
I tried to call this guy weekly because we had done everything that we wanted to do.
Wow.
He was historically coming in every 6 months, and now for the first time in our over 10, 15-year
working experience,
it's completely dead. And so I honestly started getting fearful. I almost wanted to drive to his house to see if the guy was okay.
Yeah.
And then finally he answered a call. It was about 6 months later. He returned a phone call, and he was very somber on the phone. And I said, well, you know, what's going on? I've been calling you. And he goes, yeah, it's my fault. I went back to work.
Oh, good for him.
Good for him. Good for him.
He didn't want to tell you.
He's hiding from his financial advisor.
Back to work. And so it's literally, he went back to work. And so he's been back to work for 5, maybe 6 months now. And now he says, end of January, I'm completely done.
That's not unusual, though, is it, Steve? To see people take two or three runs at retirement?
Yeah, and we had that exact conversation. They've never retired before. Many people haven't done it. And when they get there, if they've hopefully taken care of the anxiety of the money part, that's one part of it. But really, when you haven't retired before, and maybe you've used to a vacation, you've taken 2 or 3 weeks off at a time, but all of a sudden you're in week 5 or week 6 or week 7, and you've done all the things on your list. And I like to use the example, if you find yourself alphabetizing the spice rack, it might be time to go back and consider doing something else, be it volunteering or doing something. But now I think he's gone through the process. I don't want to call it a grieving process, but it was definitely an experience that he didn't have the answers. And now he's, I think, got a much better game plan of specific things he wants to accomplish outside of the workforce. And he's gonna try retirement take two.
And Steve, do you think that if he had been able to go from 5-day-a-week job down to a 3-day-a-week job, he would have ever retired, or 2-day-a-week? So slowly.
I would say we've had that conversation as well. And his job definitely probably allows some of that flexibility. And it wouldn't surprise me if that's not what it morphs into the second time around. And that's absolutely fine. For some reason, our society's built up this. You hit your 60s, or you've been at a company for a certain period of time, and you've got to retire. And if you don't, it's like you've done something wrong. Oh, look, so-and-so's 65, and they haven't been able to retire yet. Or, heaven forbid, you retire and then go back. They think you've did something wrong because you can't stay, quote, retired. Like it's you're not successful if you didn't achieve those retirement goals.
Well, Steve, on behalf of all of us here at Hanson McLean, we hope you never retire.
That's right.
Even though you may be able to financially do so, it would be our own self-interest if you stayed and worked forever.
Well, there you go. There's kind of my game plan as well. I can't imagine. I don't understand the retirement word. I can't imagine not doing this for as long as I possibly can.
Well, you know what's interesting, Steve? So we are the three of us talking here, Pat McLean, myself, Scott Hanson, Steve Burnett, all financial advisors for 25 years, whatever, plus. And we've all seen people move into retirement. And we've all seen people do it well.
And some people do it terribly.
And personally, I'm 51. I don't know what I'm going to feel like when I'm 71, but I can tell you right now, I hope to continue to work until I can't anymore.
Yeah. I don't know how I would do. Steve, how would you do in retirement?
I would not do well.
Yeah.
If I didn't find purpose, if I didn't have a passion for something, if I wasn't doing something for others, I don't know what I would do. I don't play golf. I'm not good at it. I don't want to get better. I like to fish, but I like to fish, but I couldn't do it every day.
Yeah.
And this is still really this job and being part of an organization. It's super fulfilling, and I think people need to find those voids because they think they want to play golf every day until they do, and then it's different than what they actually expected.
Well, yeah, it's interesting, Steve, how retirement planning in and of itself has changed over the years, because oftentimes now when we're meeting with clients at Hanson McLean, it's not this traditional retirement that I'm 62 now and here's my monthly pension and I'm not. Oftentimes it's more of, oh, I'm working for a few months here, now I'm not working, or I'm thinking about doing this sort of thing next year. And so there tends to be some other earned income or business income that flows through. And so it adds a layer of complexity when we're looking at 401k distributions and all those other aspects.
or people accepting less income for a job so that they have less responsibilities, but they stay
absolutely
on payroll.
See that too.
Yeah.
And it has a big thing to do around Social Security planning. If you're going to continue to earn income, how much income, and should you delay Social Security sooner so benefits don't get reduced? So there are a lot of moving parts with what we're seeing with the new level of retirement and what it looks like for people, because it has changed, definitely.
You know, so I was bike riding with he's a friend of mine and a client, and he's a doctor. And he said, you know, I'm only working 40 hours a week now. I feel like I don't even have a job. He said, I've never seen anything like this. I only work 40 hours a week.
All right, Steve, thanks for taking some time to be with us today.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Appreciate it. And it's interesting, Pat, just how it has changed so much. And you look at people starting businesses at this stage in life.
It's more actually and more people over the age of 55 are starting businesses, not just as a percentage, but just starting businesses than any other population.
Isn't that bizarre?
Yeah. It's not the bait. It's
retirepreneurs. Retirepreneurs.
And they're not oftentimes big businesses, but they're businesses.
But you need to be careful, because I remember years ago I had a client that had a, let's just say a business, I won't say what kind, that was bleeding money. And we would meet every few months, and they were going into the retirement account to keep it afloat.
Yep.
And it was always, well, once this changes, but this is about to happen. This is about to happen. And I remember saying, look, we need to have a clear line here.
Where you don't go cross. Otherwise.
Where you don't, I don't care how green the grass looks on that next month, whatever's happening. We're going to have a drop dead here, because otherwise you're going to destroy your retirement. And they destroyed their retirement.
They did.
That line kept moving.
That's human nature.
That's why I say you need to be careful.
Yeah.
My whole point.
It's human nature that it's going to turn. It's going to turn. It's going to turn.
Yeah. So, I mean, maybe I failed him as a financial advisor at Hanson McLean. I did the best
I could. Well, you're not a financial dictator. You're just an advisor. Encourage them to quit spending the money on the business. So.
Well, hey, now we are running out of time, and we want to let our listeners know, that would be you, of our great Social Security workshops we have coming in. This is really for someone, if you are within a couple years of retirement, or maybe you are right at the Social Security ages, you're between 62 and 66, and you're trying to figure out, you know, when should I take Social Security, and you've done a good job saving, you'll want to come to a workshop that we're having.
And this actually is one of the most attended workshops we do in the year. In fact, the ones we did late last year, we had to close most of them because we could only accommodate a couple hundred people at each one. So the dates are the week of March the 12th in the Sacramento area. We have them in Roseville, Sacramento, Auburn, and Rancho Cordova. And then the week of March the 19th, we have them throughout the San Francisco Bay Area, as well as in Denver, in Cherry Creek, Highlands Ranch, and Broomfield. And that's the week of March the 19th. For more information, go to HansonMcLean.com to register.
We're out of time. We'll see you next week. This has been Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
This program has been brought to you by Hanson McLean Advisors, a registered investment advisory firm. Any ideas presented during this program are not intended to provide specific financial advice, and you should consult your own financial advisor, tax consultant, or estate planning attorney to conduct your own due diligence.